Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 71 of the Peak of Serenity podcast. I am one of your hosts, Emilson, and as always, we are joined by my co-host, also in a red shirt.
Anomaly. Always in red. Hello, hello.
Is red one of the FC Bayern colors?
Yes, my entire room.
Yeah, I see the jersey behind you now. Yeah. That was actually a silly question. Yeah. But yeah, so today we are going to be talking primarily about a couple of things that happened this week. First, we have the new Mythic Plus seasonal effects just popped up on PTR this week. We've had hints of it, so we already knew it was Anima Power related, but we didn't know any of the details. We have details now. And then second, we got a Sired and Athreus nerf on Mythic, which is kind of surprising to me. And I wanted to talk a little bit about, our experiences with Denathrius after the nerf and see what you thought.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, we can definitely go through that.
Before we get into that, there's some other stuff that happened this week.
Yeah. And let's maybe I'll do a little bit of rearranging on some of the topics for this week. But yeah, so I think the first up, just kind of give a quick week in review. So we actually found out exactly what was happening in the Great Push last week with the Plague Boars. Right. I think you and I had originally thought it was a global aggro thing.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it was actually a bug. Essentially, it's a permanent misdirect bug that I'd heard about this previously. I think it's been around in some iterations for a while.
It's just never been very useful until now.
Yeah, exactly. So the idea, the way this bug works is that you essentially just let misdirect expire. So you put it up on your target, you just let it expire, you don't utilize it. And after that, basically you have permanent misdirect on whoever you cast it on until you cast it again. I know that Wowhead was doing some testing. It seems to last pretty much through zoning, through a bunch of different sort of, movement, things like that. So that is what Echo was utilizing to basically snap the plague borers all around Plaguefall. It was, I guess it was Fragments was on the Hunter, misdirected now, and then just ran to the plague borers.
Yeah. That also explains why the plague borers were always snapping to now.
Exactly.
Not snapping to a random party member. So we saw on the third boss where they had the party split on the boss, the bear tank and the... I don't remember what they're... I guess it was...
the mage. Bear tank and mage on the platform, and then healer,
And so the plague borers always went to the tank, which is obviously very convenient. Makes it much easier to control.
Yeah, when you're trying to kill the boss. So, yeah, I mean, it was interesting that it comes out like this. There's a bunch of, community back-and-forth stuff. I mean, I think I talked about this even last week, thinking it was global aggro and thought it was a cool thing. Even now, I think my opinion is the same, that I think that's just cool. It's just a bug that is in the game, and they utilize it to basically do the snaps. I mean, it's one of those things where if they would probably have asked Blizzard beforehand, Blizzard would have been like, no, don't do this. But so at the same time,
we don't have the exact text of what they asked, but they did ask about this.
Oh, did they? Okay.
From the sounds of it, they didn't ask with all of the details. I believe that they asked about specifically snapping the plague borers, but I don't think they explained exactly what they had intended when they said
how to do the
snapping the plague borers by abusing this misdirection bug.
Interesting. Well, they asked. It's one of those, it's like what I used to ask my parents for things, right? I'd be like, I'd give them I'd ask it in a way where I wasn't technically lying to them, but probably should have given them a couple more details before they let me do what I wanted to do.
Yeah. I think Jatinus had a really interesting take on this, where basically his take was that he thought it was largely fine because kind of the mode of operation for Mythic Plus for its entire existence has been that the high end you abuse bugs.
Yeah.
Because it's the only way to do things. And because the dungeons themselves are buggy. We saw a couple of things get fixed, like knocking mobs off of the map in Halls of Atonement. That got fixed.
Yep.
But things like, misdirection in the cannons in...
Oh, yeah.
What's the awful dungeon from... the
worst Tol'Dagor.
Tol'Dagor. All kinds of, other bugs have been abused in these instances. It hasn't been as prominent on the stage because of the MDI format.
Right. Yeah.
Snapping was the main one that showed up in MDI. But so his take was basically that this is in line with how dungeons are done. All of the teams knew this.
Right.
And if they had been aware of this strategy, they probably would have used it too. And we did see Does the Bear Stream actually try and pull this off as well before realizing that they didn't have the setup for it.
Yeah.
But then he was also like, should like critical of this being that the way dungeons are, that like dungeons are just buggy messes and so the tournament is defined by bugs kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like kind of putting the onus on Blizzard, like if they don't want people using bugs like this in their tournament, they need to make the dungeons less buggy.
Right, yeah, or like make the rules more strict, right? Like
potentially
leave the bugs in, but make the rules more strict. I think, like, I watched Max's take on this, and he looked at it more from like raid-wise, right? I think Mythic Plus, you're right, very, you know, lots of like things have been abused and things like that. But even in like raids or World First content, like they'll hit bugs where like they might break a portion of a fight and they can either kill it and move on, or like not kill it and sort of be behind, right? And like he gave an example of which one?
So Ilganoth, they had the no dispel strat, but assumed it was like a bug and that Blizzard would be fixing it, and so they didn't do it.
Right.
They killed Ilganoth with dispels, like the harder way, and fell behind a little bit because of that. I think Method also did it with dispels, but then one of the other guilds that was progressing at the time did the no dispel strat and killed it, you know, more quickly.
Yeah. He also gave an example of a boss back in Legion, like was it Kin'Garoth, which was like the three adds, right, that would spawn at certain percentages. He basically said, like, if we killed an add at a certain point while the boss was casting, he stopped doing adds. For the rest of the fight. So like we basically, it made it a lot easier, and like we didn't kill using that bug, but then, you know, maybe the guild behind them did or something like that. And similarly, like the maiden strat that Method did, if you remember, was really weird, where they like ran around in a circle. The reason they did it was you could solo soak some of the smashes in certain situations, like hunters and things like that. So, you know, Limit didn't do that, you know, at the time Method or Echo did, and so like they were a little bit faster there because of it. So he's like, there's always been like that weird thing where like you toe the line of like, is this game breaking or not? And so I think the game is just,
I know there's been instances where like during the World First race, the top guilds have a line of communication with Blizzard and they can ask, you know, can we do this? Like they'll encounter a bug and they will ask, can we do this? And if the answer is no, then they don't do it. And some of that is they don't want to get banned, right?
Yeah.
Because we have seen like, who was it that got banned in Wrath for using the bombs on the
platform? Was it Exorcist?
It might have been Exorcist. I don't remember.
Yeah,
they want to avoid that.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, no, I mean, I think it's interesting that this is like how they did it, right? Just sort of highlighting a larger bug. And I mean, this seems like it's funny, like this doesn't seem like an issue in almost any other content, right? Except for like at the highest level or something like this, right? Like having permanent misdirect on someone doesn't seem like a massive issue.
I'm not gonna lie, I would love if like every time I went into a key, just like the hunter had permanent misdirect on me. That would be phenomenal. True. Please do that.
That's fair. But yeah, no, I think it was interesting that that's the way it came out. So I was definitely wrong. I thought it was a global aggro thing, but yeah, I think it was still a cool strategy the way they pulled it off. So
I expect that they will do another great push style tournament. And I expect that when they do, they will be a little bit more specific about what is and isn't allowed. Because I think like snapping is basically reached the point that it's acceptable, but then abusing other bugs to make the snapping work is where they're going to probably like draw a line and say, no, you can't do this.
Yeah, no, that's true. So, all right, well, then moving on to the next one. Next up, we have actually probably one of the best changes ever is in the latest BTR client, they basically added a reconnect button. So if you've ever been disconnected from the game, it basically dumps you back out to the login screen and you're presented with like a blank username and password field. Generally, what I do at that point is I just close my game and log back into the launcher because it's quicker at this point. Back in the day, you'd have to type in your username and password again. Blizzard has now added a button that just says reconnect, and you click it and it automatically reconnects you. It's absolutely amazing. I'm a huge fan of it. It's just hilarious that it took 16 years to get this done. So
I think it's good. I think it's neat. I don't think it's that useful because, I mean, there were very few times that I get disconnected and I'm even able to reconnect right away.
Yeah.
Like, it's usually like, oops, the internet's out.
Yeah, you're screwed.
And at that point, it doesn't really matter whether I can have that reconnect button or not.
Yeah, I've had it. I've been like DC'd at certain points if like I'm working on like a weird week or something like that, where like I send too many commands all at once or like messages, right? And it'll kick me out. But
this is a great change for the demon hunters of the world.
Oh yeah,
all those Fel Rush disconnects, they'll be able to get back in that much faster.
Just real quick. So yeah. So I thought a little bit of tidbit there. But yeah, it's an interesting button they've added. All right. So moving on to the final one for this week, or final sort of last week thing, is that they've updated all the loot in Tazavesh, which is the new mega dungeon. Basically, now it is no longer upgradable, but does drop at 226 item level. So you know, you won't see it drop it. I think 210 was its base item level, and you could upgrade it from there. Now it's going to be a flat 226, but not upgradable, which basically means it's now the catch-up dungeon, right? So like, if you're going to try and regear up alts and get them sort of at a basic level, do it through the mega dungeon. So,
yep. And remember, there are items in there, much like in Mechagon, that have unique effects on them. Yep. I haven't seen anything that's on the level of the Mechagon bracers.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything like that.
But there is still a chance that some of them will see use early on in the tier for those effects. But this is honestly pretty nice. Like, having to grind out upgrades for loot is like, I like parts of the Valor system, but if the item level is going to be low and capped low anyway, like, just give us the fully upgraded stuff. So I like this change.
Yeah, it'll be real nice. Like I said, I think particularly for alts, it'll be really good. And even there does end up being a broken item in there, like, it's easy to get a 226, just run it once, right?
Yep.
Yep.
No fishing for Titan Forge Mechagon bracers.
No, it's true. That is true. One thing to note, I didn't put this in the last week because I think they just data mined it today, or it just came out today, but there is a hard mode, which I think we all agreed. No details on like how to trigger it or what happens. The way it's looking is it's probably going to be very similar to the way Mechagon was, which is like the first three or four bosses will have you do something different to then trigger the hard mode in the dungeon itself. But there is a quest in there. It's just incomplete at this point. So
yeah,
looks like we'll be seeing a hard mode, which will be fun.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. Yeah. I am hoping that they don't return the achievement of doing the hard mode with no deaths, because that was...
Yeah. Yeah,
that was a little tilty, not gonna lie.
It's funny. I never did that, but I do have the immortal title, which is from doing Nax 40. So, or not Nax 40. I'm sorry, Nax 25. With no one dying, which is still probably to me one of the hardest ones to do. Because it's just going through that raid, particularly with how easy it was, not having anybody die, was just it was tough. But hopefully they don't return that, because that was annoying to do, particularly with the way the last boss worked. So
as a friend of mine did, if you are selling Hertz Locker runs and then Fel Rush off the last platform,
that's awful. I'd be so pissed. That'd be rough.
Not fun.
Yeah, so that's it for last week. Last week was a pretty light week. I mean, there was a PTR patch, but I mean, nothing. I mean, other than the Mythic Plus stuff, I think Mythic Plus was the big stuff they added this week. Nothing else really around.
There was one thing I did want to touch from the PTR update. It's nothing big. A lot of the end or like later tier, the new Soulbind powers got nerfed. Some of the real outlier ones, like we had talked about, Dreamweaver had a heal that was extremely good, very, very high throughput. And they added like a 1 minute cooldown to the heal. Something like that.
Okay.
So instead of like, the heal itself, when it procs, is still the same as it was. It's just it can only happen once per minute now instead of having no cooldown. So obviously much worse. So they are bringing those in line, which is what we expected. But I did figure, you know, I would mention that it is still they are still going through tuning.
Yeah, we'll see that pretty much up until probably the last couple of weeks here. So so cool, but yeah, I think that's it for this week. So I guess we'll get into sort of our first topic of the day, which is the Mythic Sire Denathrius nerf, which was which is an interesting one. So to read the nerf, basically what it states is phase two now ends when Denathrius's health reaches 37%. Previously it was 40%, or really 40.5, but
yeah, I think it's actually 37.5 now too. It's yeah, basically 3%.
Yeah. Or after 225 seconds, it was previously 210 seconds, so an additional 15 seconds in phase two on Mythic difficulty. So did you do Denathrius this week?
Yep. So there's one thing that is they don't mention here, like as it stands or how it was before the nerf. When you reach the point in the fight that, you know, you push the boss or the boss pushed from a timer, there were no more mechanics at that point.
Yep.
So this is not just 15 seconds of additional like free DPS of the boss because they added an impale.
Yep.
Which is slightly awkward. It doesn't really introduce any new awkwardness because you already, like, we had to slow DPS so that we didn't push in the middle of a massacre, mm-hmm. which is obviously very dangerous if you do push during massacre.
Yeah.
Now, instead of being careful about the massacre, we have to be careful about this impale to not push during the impale. Because if you do, it's very dangerous. People end up taking a bunch of extra damage. They go into the last phase with the bleeds. It's not very nice.
Yeah.
So it is possible, though, with current DPS, if you're re-clearing the raid, you can actually beat the impale.
Yeah.
We got extremely close to beating the impale with someone dead for most of phase two. So it's definitely possible. We'll get there once
we
make it through phase two cleanly. But this nerf is actually very big. Like, this is almost a 10% nerf to the damage requirement in phase three. It's like an 8% nerf or something like that.
Yeah.
So we had we have an assassination rogue. Very good. Usually our top damage in phase three, and they died right before phase three. We couldn't res them in time. Mm-hmm. And so we just did phase three without them. And we were totally fine. Like, it was like our second fastest kill ever.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we were real quick. I mean, we killed it when we did it. We killed it right after the last blood price, right? Or prince price.
Yeah.
So like, and we probably could have killed it before it, if we did just like a slight, like literally it died as we dropped down. So, yeah, I mean, the damage change is crazy. I will tell you the impale is very awkward. We knew about it going in, which was nice. However, the first time we did it fine, we got the impale, you know, we had a couple of people dead through phase two. So we got the impale, then pushed them and it wasn't a big deal. The pull we killed him on, though, we pushed him as the impale was cast. And we were like, oh yeah, it's fine. It'll just cancel, right? The impale will just cancel. No, it does not cancel. The impale still goes off.
I think there is a timer where it would cancel, but it's one of those things where it's going to be super finicky to actually hit that. And really, you're better off just planning to either beat it by a good margin or stop DPS and wait for it to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. So for us, we ended up getting the impale going to that phase. We were able to heal through, so it wasn't that bad, but it was very awkward because, like, everybody was running through mirrors and someone's like, the impale's still going off. And like our raider's like, oh, it'll probably cancel, right? Like, as he says that, like, everybody gets hit. I was like, not canceling. So, but yeah, no, it was, it's crazy. Like, some number one, like the amount of like just DPS time we have. So like now for us, like we kill like the last set of Cabalas you have to kill, right? We basically like focus them down now. Where before we used to like just cleave off. Well, sorry, maybe I'm thinking the wrong way. Yeah. So we just try and kill them as quickly as possible now because we have so much extra time for DPS perspective, right? So yeah, so I think that's like a big change for us. And then yeah, the timing is, it felt real nice to like go into the really terrible movement phase or portion of the mirror phase and the boss be at like, you know, 8-7% health, right?
Right.
And at that point, just being like, if we just get 20%, not even, if we get like half the raid to live this, we kill the boss.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's definitely like, I like this, the way that this nerf works. It's very careful. Like, it doesn't trivialize anything. It doesn't introduce any new nasty overlaps. Like, the impale kind of sucks, but it's not really anything new, because it sounds like you would have been in the same boat that we were of, like, having to hold DPS so you don't push in the middle of the massacre. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
So, I like it. It basically, all it really boils down to is that you are able to take more time. Like, you're able to lose more damage in favor of doing mechanics in phase two and phase three. Like, you can do the mechanics and do a little bit less DPS and still kill the boss before the enrage timer. And that's really, really, I like it.
Yeah, I mean, you can afford to, you know, lose a player, you know, have him push at 40% like he typically would have, and then still have plenty of time in phase three, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's definitely going to be harder for you, but, I mean, you can kill the boss if you push him, if he goes over at 40%. So, it's a really like, I think, targeted change. I really like, I think we've talked about this too, even when we were thinking about like, how would you nerf Denathrius, right? And like, I think you and I were both on the same page of like, health nerfs to the boss suck, would just be awful, change every timing. It would not be fun.
Yeah.
But this is probably one of them. Yeah, giving yourself less time in phase three, more time in phase two would make sense. I think beyond this, right, they make maybe less, I think I talked about this last time, maybe less massacre lines during massacre, and maybe the puddles take longer to hit, right? You have more time to maneuver around them.
They did actually, in a roundabout way, nerf Crescendo as well, and that is that we talked about the fix where Crescendo no longer knocks you if you're basically getting yanked by Hand of Destruction. Which is another very nice change. And we actually did have that happen to us for the first time this week.
Really? We had a
Crescendo landing like all stacked under the boss while we were getting gripped in from Hand of Destruction.
Oh, Jesus.
And nothing happened. We were fine.
That's super scary.
Yeah.
No, I'm a huge fan of this. So I think it's a really good nerf to the fight. And I don't think it doesn't lessen the difficulty. Because I have a friend who's starting progression on Denathrius now. And he sort of asked a little bit about this. I'm like, it just sort of gives you a little bit more leeway in phase two and phase three is all.
Yeah.
All the mechanics are still there. You still have to like execute, but,
yeah, you still have to do the whole fight. But guilds that are in like deep farm are going to be having a little bit easier time just like finishing off a kill if they play a little bit messily. Guilds that are progressing it are going to have, an easier time securing that kill on a like messy phase three push.
Yeah. Yeah, or just seeing more of phase three. Because I think, like,
we're just seeing
for more, us, like, for us, when we were doing progression, phase three, like, seeing phase three was the difficult part. Because, like, not only do you have to get to phase three, but then you have to get to, like, the difficult part of phase three.
Right. That second massacre ravage overlap is one of the most challenging and rippy parts of the fight. And,
it's being able to see that
there repeatedly is important.
Yeah. So no, I think awesome change by Blizzard. I'm a huge, huge fan. So
yeah, So this, I think Denathrius is going to go down as one of the like best bosses of all time, both because of like it's very well tuned, it's very well made. There's not a lot to dislike about it.
Yep.
And also, every time they've hotfixed it, it's been like minor tweaks to make the fight less frustrating. And then this final nerf is one of the smallest like. Patch is coming soon, guys. Final nerfs that we have ever gotten.
Yeah, on a boss, yeah. No, it's you're right. Probably one of the best. You know, definitely top five for me, top three for me, I think, in terms of like doing it and progressing on it and stuff like that. So it's been fun. Well, cool. Anything else on the Denathrius stuff?
I hope Sylvanas can
God, dude, that compare. Face. It looks absolutely god awful. I'm not excited.
Yeah, I'm not hopeful. Well, yeah. I am hopeful, but I'm not expecting it.
Yeah, we'll see. All right. So then the other thing, I think the other major topic we want to talk about today was just sort of the new Mythic Plus affix. So they finally implemented the Mythic Plus affix on the PTR. So you're able to sort of log in, do some keys, you know, utilizing it and seeing it. And we had known for a while now that it had something to do with anima powers, you know, how it interacted, what those powers were. We didn't know anything about that. But this week we did get to see that. And it's very much like Awakening, except instead of portals, you get anima powers, right?
Yeah.
So the way it works, just to give you guys some background, is around each instance, there's going to be four different lieutenants. Each of those lieutenants has a like permanent debuff around them. So like one lieutenant, you'll take, it's like 30% less healing. One lieutenant makes you take 50% more physical damage. Actually, it's 50% less healing, sorry. And there's like one that roots you, or slows you. I forget the last one's like a
50% slow, by the way.
Yeah. So they're each lieutenant has their own sort of debuff around them. And if you don't kill the lieutenant, the final boss of the Mythic Plus instance will have whatever, you know, their debuff is. So you kind of want to kill all of them. Probably there's one or two you could probably get away with not killing. But for the most part, you're going to want to kill all the lieutenants, at least early on. And then each of the lieutenants are in a certain part of the instance. So they'll, at this point, I think they're very static spawns. At least all the runs I watched.
Yeah. What I'm actually kind of expecting, like, they did this with Awakened, and I think they'll do it again, where the lieutenant spawn locations are fixed, but which one is in which spot will vary from week to week.
Okay, that's, yeah, that's
like
probably...
The Awakened, like, you could have the blob boss in a pillar 1 week, and then the next week it could be the spider boss there. Uh-huh. I expect they'll do that again here. It really reduces the level of route changes that you need, because if you're doing a route and you're just still doing all four of them, at least for a like just doing 15-ish keys kind of group, it does mean that you don't need a new route every single week.
Right. Yeah. So that'll be, yeah. So that's the way it's set up. And then each time you kill one, you get to choose one of three anima powers that are role specific. Sorry. So there's basically tank anima powers, healer anima powers, and then DPS anima powers. Yep. And they're at least from what I've seen, the powers themselves are static. So like when you kill like Cold Heart, he will always have the same three healer anima powers you select from.
I think people are speculating that they will rotate from week to week, but at least right now, like we're still in the first reset of it. So we will have to see next week, but right now they are fixed, which is actually great. It means that there's not any nonsense about like not being able to push a key because you got bad powers. And even if, like, let's be honest, you don't need the anima powers to be able to complete the 15, it's still going to feel bad if you got unlucky and got bad powers and then the key depleted, when like if you had gotten good powers, it could have covered up for some mistakes that were made.
Yeah. No, yeah. I mean, and yeah, so I think that's the nice part about the no RNG, right? Because I think powers, like we see this in Torghast, where if you don't get, like, for a monk, if you don't get corrosive dosage on like the first one or two floors, you know it's going to be a 45-minute run, right? Like you just, at that point, you're like, great, I'm going to be here a while. Let's settle in and do some stuff, right? So yeah. I think that it not being RNG-based, I think, is great. The other thing, too, is the mobs, like Prideful does this, too. The mobs don't reset. The lieutenants don't reset health. So if you did wipe or you sort of mispull, I watched a couple Halls runs, and behind one of the shards is a lieutenant. And there's a couple of times where, like, I'd watch tanks, like, glaives bounce to it and hit it because it's close enough. And I think Avenger's Shield will bounce too.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so, like, the idea is, like, you can actually
pull. Storms. Do you remember the first boss in Shrine of the Storms?
Yes.
You get Avenger's Shield trash on both sets of stairs. So if you were playing a paladin, you had to clear both the stairs above and the stairs below before you actually pulled the boss.
Yeah.
And that was extremely annoying.
Yeah, so I think that's the only thing that I saw that'll take some getting used to, but no, I think the actual lieutenants themselves sort of have, I guess, each have a theme, right? They don't seem too difficult. It seems like it's really going to depend on what aura they have. Depends on how you end up pulling them. Like, I think the physical damage increasing one and the healing reduction one are going to be solo pulled. Like, I don't think you could sort of mix them together.
The physical damage increase seems extremely unlikely to ever be pulled with something else. Like, maybe a small pool of stuff that like doesn't do that much damage. But like in a low key, you don't need to pull it with something else. So why would you? In a high key, even not that much damage is still a lot of damage. And 50% right. increased physical damage taken is a lot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So that's sort of the one that I think, or those two at least, will probably end up being pulled solo. And then like the slow one, you can probably pull with a couple. But I know that they have a dot that does AoE damage around them. So he puts a dot on an individual. Does AoE damage around that person? That's super, super scary. Like, I think I watched Jack in his first 15 run just try and spam the person with like flash heals on his priest, and it like didn't, their health like didn't move.
That was dispellable. Is that wrong?
I don't think so. I mean, he was not dispelling it.
Maybe it's the final, like the buff that the final boss get puts dispellable ones on. I don't know.
Yeah. No, I didn't see, it didn't look like that dot was dispellable though. But yeah, there's, these things also do a lot of just individual damage. So, you know, I think for a typical 15 person, like just running 15s, you're probably just going to pull these solo in any sort of scenario. At the higher end, you'll probably see maybe the cold one, maybe the fire one, have that be pulled with more trash. So, but it's an interesting affix. The anima powers themselves are interesting too.
There are definitely some outliers right now. We've got the Minara in chat talking about the Thorns anima power in particular for tanks, which is extremely good. Every time you get hit, deal 7% of your max HP as damage to the thing that hit you.
Sure.
Obviously, that's very, very good. It is better for some tanks than others. Like, obviously, Blood Decay and Vengeance Demon Hunter and Guardian have higher HP than Brewmaster, so they get more out of it. That is one I would be shocked if that were not, like, nerfed a lot before it went live, because it's just so strong right now. But at the same time, I think it is actually a really neat effect, because that's a very interesting way to try and encourage people to not kite on their tank. Because
right,
you'd be giving up this huge source of damage if you do kite. And that's like, well, maybe you sit in there and you hit more defensives. Maybe you bring, you know, a priest that can use pain suppression on you, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're saying it didn't make them do more than the DPS as far as, like, damage done, which I would assume that's the case, because DPS also get their own powers.
Yeah.
But it's still extremely good. Like, I've seen screenshots of damage meters, and it's like their top damaging ability by a mile.
Jesus.
And so that's when these are obviously still first draft, still being tuned. I think I've been hearing that you basically always take the like damage proc ones for everyone. Like the volcanic plume one for DPS is extremely good. That's like themed after the volcanic effect. Mm-hmm. And it just like puts a volcano under a mob, and then it explodes and it does a bunch of damage. Like fire, like you get it and you forget it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and I know that some of the healer ones, like there's one healer one that spawns orbs that if you pick them up, give you 10% mana back. And they seem to be spawning a lot. So we don't know if it's like based on cast or just every time it heals, it's supposed to spawn. But essentially, if you get that anima power, you have unlimited mana as a healer, which is fun. Mistweaver is finally good, because we don't have to care about our mana bars. No, I don't know if we're still good then. But no, there's that one. There's like one where like, if I don't know if this is something tanks get, but your auto attacks have a chance to stun mobs for 4 seconds on a 30-second ICD. Yeah, so it less good for like the ranged healers, like, you know, shaman and priests and stuff like that. But for paladins and monks, it's probably a good one. When Jack was showing it competed with like the two other powers were really bad, so you ended up, you know, that one taking that one no matter what. So
that seems like if that one does show up for tanks, that would be extremely good for Brewmaster, for example, mm-hmm. because we can dual wield fast weapons and just having a lot of attacks. And obviously there is the ICD on it. I would love to test whether the ICD is per target or on you, because
I'm pretty sure it's on you.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it really doesn't super matter whether you have a fast weapon or not, but
yeah,
fun to think about.
Yeah, yeah. So there's some interesting ones like that. And then there's like just the random things that Blizzard throws out there, like eat faster.
Yeah.
So if you pick up an anima power, you can like eat faster, which I guess would probably only make sense for like healers if they wanted to regen mana but didn't want to take the mana regen one. Like yeah. So
I mean, it would also depend, like maybe the first lieutenant you kill has that one but doesn't have the mana regen one.
Yeah.
So then true. You would take that one to tide you over until you get the mana regen one.
Yeah. That's true. You could do it that way too. But yeah, it seems like it's gonna be cool, like the affix specific ones, like you mentioned the fire plume, right? That's very much like volcanic. There's one that's very much like sanguine that'll do damage and heal based on who's around you. So like that's one that I don't know if that's healer only, but I know that some of the streams I watched, some of the healers had that one where it just sort of like 10 yards around you does damage and heals based on you healing. So it's nice. Yeah, it's not bad. So I think it's cool the way the powers work out. I think though it'll be fun to see. Like what I hope for is that some of these powers break something in these instances, as always. So I hope that is that's a thing. But also, you know, I would also hope that they do, like we've mentioned, the rotation thing where maybe one week the lieutenants are in different positions and then potentially the lieutenants have different powers available on them. You know, that way, at least for the week, it's a little bit of a mix up, because I think it can get very it'll potentially get very boring once you figure out, all right, these are the four anima powers I want to get. They're always at the same four positions. So I just do the dungeon normally, like St. Rothel the same, right? I think it'd be much better if they could like mix that part of it up. At least week to week. So
that's basically Manera in chat is saying, you know, we ran 15 to 20 dungeons on PTR this week, and yet generally you take the exact same powers every time because they are the exact same powers. So there's a clearly best one on every mob. Not really situationable. So it does become boring and dull. And so like their suggestion is basically what you suggested of like have them rotate on a weekly basis.
And I'm hoping, and I'm wondering too, like as Blizzard sort of learns about this, potentially they see like the ability to like add some powers that might be group dependent too, right? Like maybe I don't know how this is always the tough part, right? Which is like, how do you make something interesting and not feel like mandatory, right? Like the eating faster one you mentioned, it'd be interesting if it, you know, today it doesn't compete with the mana one, the mana orb one. But the mana orb one has other ones that maybe you would, hey, maybe you don't want to take the mana orb one because another one this week is better for the affixes or whatever. And that way you then end up having to take the eat faster one to regen the mana, right? So, I don't know. We'll see how they sort of flesh this system out. It would be cool, like Blizzard's never going to do this, but it would be cool if like halfway through the season they changed up the powers and sort of pulled maybe more in, like expanded the list or you know.
I mean, they have completely screwed the pooch on doing that in Torghast, right? Like Torghast is the lowest stakes place that they could just be like, oh, this week there's five new powers, have fun.
Yeah.
And they haven't.
Well, to be fair, they don't, it's funny, they don't necessarily touch systems once they implement them. Like as weird as they do change, but what I'm trying to say is like they don't generally, like if a system has space to add things to it, they generally don't add things to it in the middle of a patch, right?
Yeah,
like we're not going to get new conduits. We didn't get new what was the Netherlight Crucible things called in Legion, whatever, like the runes you put in your legendary weapon. And then you get like certain powers on it. They didn't change that up really ever. Relics. Yes. Thank you. So I think as cool as my point of view would be like, hey, it'd be fun if they added or removed stuff. I don't know. It just seems like we're going to get what we get at the start and then people will figure it out. It'll be somewhat boring, but still fun when it's like, hey, it's Sanguine week for healers. So healers to do damage and heal everybody around them and drop puddles everywhere. Right. Like that's fun.
It does have the potential to add some really interesting layers to it. Yeah. And there are going to be things like the volcanic plume one has a delay on doing the damage.
Oh, okay.
So things like that's going to be worse on Sanguine Week, where you just have to move the mobs. And if you get a Sanguine or if you get a Volcanic spawn, as you're moving the mobs out of the Sanguine, then sucks to be you. They're not getting hit by the Volcanic. Yeah. Also, apparently, tanks can't see the Volcanic plumes from DPS players.
I would imagine it's the player only seeing those.
Yeah.
Like another one of those which abilities. Which is
because of that delay. A little awkward.
Yeah.
Not going to lie. Yeah. A little awkward. It's a little bit like getting yelled at by my hunters in my guild for dragging things out of wild spirits.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I think there's definitely potential here for like interesting power interactions, but I think the problem here now, though, is going to be you're going to want to potentially, like, I don't know if it's skip more, but like you're going to want to move to try and get these lieutenants. If they're as impactful as we think they are, you're going to want to try and move to like get them as quickly as possible, which means rogues are back on the menu, right? In terms of like Shroud, like potentially plays in like routes, get into like, hey, we want to get to this lieutenant or these two lieutenants right off the bat.
I mean, rogues are already very good because of Shroud. The potion changes, for better or worse, do mean that you can do Invisbot skips more reliably because they have the same cooldown as Shroud.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how things end up and which ones the community ends up settling on is like, we can do these with the final boss, and which ones Blizzard buffs so that you can't do them with the final boss, or like it's way more punishing to do them with the final boss.
Yeah. Can we tell some of like the top teams figure out, hey, this is how fast we can push this and like where it makes sense to like, you know, either get the power or not, because that's what it's going to end up being, right? Do you need that power? Is that power worth the health that you have to chew through on the lieutenant,
right?
And the time you have to spend that. So
yeah, so apparently they do have true sight, so you can't just shroud past them, but you can shroud to them.
Yeah, sorry, I meant. It was like you want to get to them and kill them quickly. So it's right. More...
So you want to skip other trash. Like you'd want to shroud to the lieutenant, do the lieutenant, and then clear the trash back using the powers that you got.
Exactly. Yeah.
Kind of like the old Temple of Sethralis strat where you go to the end, do the last boss mostly, and then get the empowerment buff and then back clear the entire instance buff.
Yeah. That was so dumb. But yeah, so I think they're we'll see how this one plays out. I honestly, it's funny, like, you know, not playing this right, but mostly watching a lot of it, I kind of miss Prideful, in that at least Prideful, like, there was some strategy in terms of like how you killed to like trigger them at certain points, right? You had some thought process, like if you get a bad patrol, you could mess up count and spawn Pride at a bad position, don't use it where you normally do. This seems very much a like, figure out what lieutenant has what powers this week and then build your route there, right? Or really, to be fair, for 90% of the community, it's what does Dratnos tell us in the weekly route to do, right? Yeah. Like, you know what I mean?
At the same time, I don't want to worry about percent anymore.
Oh, but it's, yeah.
I don't want to have to keep doing this thing in the other side where you do like 3 platforms and then you go back to the Hikar wing so you can get your pride on Hikar, and if you miss it, you might as well just go reset the key and do it again.
That's true.
Like, it's one thing when it was like reaping and it was all downside, and if you triggered it at a bad time, you might wipe, maybe, but honestly, it wasn't a huge deal. But then Prideful is just so hugely impactful when you get it. It can just, if you get it and you're still fighting a big pack, you're gonna die.
That's true. That's true. That is true. That is true. Yeah, I guess in like as a non-tank, like I don't care about percentage, right?
Like, yeah, you're not the one that's like constantly going, okay, well, we got those 3 extra birds, so now we have to, you know, skip this one pack and we're going to do this other pack instead because it's got 0.5% less.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we're going to get the pride before we get to the boss.
That's true. That does sound a little awful. I will. Yeah. I'm there with you. Okay. I'm on your side. Yeah. This might be a little bit better. So,
yeah.
But yeah, it'll be cool. I mean, I looking at the powers now, there's nothing like the healing or the mana regen one seems cool. The Sanguine one seems cool. The rest of them, though, seem okay. Like maybe use that auto attack stun one for healers, right?
Yeah.
But there's a couple weird ones. I don't know if you read through them all. There's a couple like standing still ones, which is a very weird thing to do in Mythic Plus, right? Like I don't know, like
at the same time, there's the Soulbind abilities from like Draven, where when you stand still, you take reduced damage. And their definition of standing still is really like stutter stepping. Like you stand still and you make a small step. You stand still and you make a small step. So I could see those actually being very good if that is actually how these are implemented and not being like, oh, if you're constantly moving.
Gotcha. Yeah. So you're almost like if you get
staying still long periods of time kind of thing.
Gotcha. Yeah. Like so almost you get like a buff duration versus just say like on and off buff, like a buff that has like maybe a 1 or 2 second duration. So you could shift quickly. Yeah. Like
the Draven one, for example, on my paladin, like you stand still enough that like you can run in, you can drop consecration, you can stand still in the consecration, and then you know, okay, there's a thing you need to step out of, so you step out of it and you stand still again.
Gotcha.
And you need to start kiting and you start kiting. And by the time you've started kiting, like you've just given up on the standstill buff, right?
Yeah.
Like you're not concerned about that anymore because you're kiting. But before you reach that point, you know, it is perfectly, you still get quite a bit of value out of it.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, maybe they'll be good. It just seemed like a weird one. I think it's actually the old Resto Shaman, or maybe it was Hunter Legendary.
It was a male generic legendary in Legion. Roots of Shalajasil? I don't remember.
How do you pronounce it?
I don't remember the...
Oh, it's Shalajasil.
Shalajasil, okay. I was close.
It's good.
Yeah, it was Roots. I remember how pissed the other hunter in my guild at the time was that they got Roots first.
Oh, really? Yeah, I can imagine. So cool. Anything else on the affix or anything else you want to cover? I think it'll be fun.
Is a good direction. I think this is a really good direction. I think they really did a good job with Awakened, and this has many of the elements of Awakened.
Yeah.
And this is like, this has a lot of the things I like. One of the things I did like about Awakened that this does not have is that Awakened let you do rogue routes without a rogue.
Yeah.
And I mean, I guess we just need more rogues because we can't do rogue routes. Shroud skips, like I've done like one key in the past 2 months with a rogue in it, and it was really nice being able to just like shroud past a pack.
Yeah. Or you could be like in my halls run that I did this week where our tank under shroud just ran through mobs and pulled them. Which is like, I don't know if they knew how.
That's not how shroud works.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, so it didn't really help us. I mean, we used it, but it didn't really help us. We still had way more percent so than we needed. Well, cool. We're early. I don't understand what's going on here. We literally have time. We have plenty of time for like lore and questions on our.
Imagine that.
This is ridiculous, man.
Awful. Long overdue, we are finally getting to the lore corner.
We are. So it's funny, this lore corner started because I have zero idea what's going on in the story of World of Warcraft, literally past us killing Arthas. So Wrath of Lich King is basically where I stopped caring about lore, and to be fair, I only knew about that because I played a bunch of War 3 and cared about the story there. So yeah, so lore corner is where like it started as me explaining the Covenant campaigns, which is awful. And so now we sort of just touch on interesting lore tidbits to sort of keep the story going, because I am starting to care about the story a little bit more in the game. So today's lore corner is actually on sort of the origins of the Jailer. So in the upcoming patch, so I guess first off, there is spoilers here. So if you want to experience the story, probably turn us off for like probably 5 or 10 minutes. And we will we'll sort of maybe snap our fingers or yell really loudly about us not spoiling the story. But
if you're in chat and you don't want spoilers, you can just mute the stream and I'll poke something in chat when we're done with the lore corner.
Yeah, that makes sense.
If you are not, like if you're listening to the audio version, there will be timestamps. You can just skip to the next timestamp.
Yeah. Yeah. So, thank you, Emelson, for that. So this week is a little bit on the origins of the Jailer, or really like why the Jailer is the way he is, right? What he's doing. So basically there is a new cutscene that occurs in the game, and basically talks about how or why they banished the Jailer, right? Or Zuval, I guess, is the Jailer's actual name.
I'm going to call him the Jailer because...
Yeah, the Jailer. So basically what it was is at the start of this whole like Shadowlands world, each of the houses or each of the areas basically had their own sort of essences, right? Or symbols of the covenants. And at the time, they used those essences as sort of like to power their covenant and sort of make their covenant, like do what their covenant was responsible for in the Shadowlands. And the Jailer basically saw these as sort of like fonts of knowledge, or like he wanted to collect those so that he could become some sort of all powerful being, right? And I don't know if he had his own essence. That's the one thing I think that's a little shaky in terms, because he does have like the hole in his chest, right? This idea is like potentially there's something was there at one point. But in any event, he basically way back when tried to steal all of the power crystals, you could call them, or essences, yeah. Right?
He tried to steal all of the chaos gems.
Basically.
Robotnik.
So what ended up happening is the Primus, right, and each of the Eternal Ones, basically the Covenant leaders, was given, or you know, they banded together back then and basically banished him into the Shadowlands, and they thought they were done with him. They banished him to the Maw, and they thought they were done with him. But the problem was that since basically everything went to the Maw, like went through the Maw right before it got sort of reorganized, he started making friends there. And eventually his first big friends was, of course, Denathrius, who more than likely willingly turned over his sigil to start this whole craziness that we're sort of wrapped up in.
Small side note. I think it's very interesting that they call him the Jailer and not like the Jailed, because they imprisoned him, but he's the Jailer. Like,
it's weird.
That seems like a poor naming decision. Like, you don't throw someone in prison and then call him the sheriff.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It's a weird thing too, because they basically put him in the Maw as banishment, but then somehow he is the lead, like he owns the Maw or runs the Maw, which is like a very, like, why would you then call him? Yeah, you're right. The Jailer. Like,
I wonder if it's a little bit like you speculated that he might have his own like sigil.
Right.
And maybe that's why, like, they can't just like strip him of that power.
Yeah. So there's not a lot with the hole in his chest, and looks very like there's been some comments around like that looks very much like Uther's mark II from like Frostmourne, from like the rune blades, and the fact they can sort of scar your souls, so potentially it's something to do with that, but you know, more to come there. But I thought this was sort of, you know, at one point, like pretty much any it seems like just Deathwing all over again. I'm not gonna lie. Where it's just like, hey, like we were all friends once, or brothers and sisters, or we were pals, and like one dude wanted all this power, and we ganged up on him and kicked him out, or her and kicked him out, right? And then now they found a friend, and they're coming back, so we got to kick him out again. And it's just, I don't know. Maybe I'm like making the story a little bit too simple.
I mean, that's maybe better than my Chaos Gems analogy.
Yeah, that's true. So I think this is, I mean, it sort of gives you a little bit more backstory. The Eternal Ones, or all the different leads, know very much about the Jailer. It's not like the Jailer is a new force. It seems like they have a lot of history, which didn't really come across the first time, right? Like, or at least at the start of this expansion. And to be fair, I didn't pay much attention, but.
I mean, they didn't talk about, like, none of the faction leaders were like, oh, who is this?
That's true.
Like they all knew it was. Oh, they were like, fuck! It's like the Jailer again.
Oh god, old Zooey's going crazy again, man. Yeah, coming back. Zuval, interesting. What a weird name.
You should name one of your kids Zuval.
Zuval. First of all, not having more kids. Second of all, that's just weird. That's just, my wife would kill me. She'd be like, "Where'd you pick up this name?" I'm like,
Don't ask.
He's like the jailer of the Maw in the Shadowlands in World of Warcraft. She's like, she'd be like, you're an idiot.
She'd be like, here's the divorce papers.
Yeah. She's like, you're sleeping on the couch forever. Damn it. But yeah, so this is sort of just a little bit more backstory. I think it, I mean, it sort of makes sense too that the final fight of Sanctum of Domination occurs sort of on the same platform as like the Arbiter, right? So it seems like potentially like the Arbiter's crystal is sort of like the one that controls everything else, or sigil, right? Because that's also why they're there. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the rest of the story plays out, but we get a little bit more insight into the jailer, where he's come from, where he comes from, right? Yeah, I'm wondering too, like, the weird thing though is like they talk about all these other different worlds, right, that are out there in the nothing, or whatever they call it, the in-between. The question I have is like, is there other covenants out there, right?
I'm still like 8.2. We're gonna get a fifth covenant, calling it, or 9.2. Let's go.
That would be it'd be interesting if that happened.
It would be very interesting. Like, what, 12 new covenant abilities?
Oh, fuck off! I don't want to write more about them. I'm done. Actually, you know what?
I don't even want to update the guides we got. Not gonna lie, it's so much.
You know what'd be cool if they did do something, maybe not a brand new faction, right? But what if they did like an empowerment to the existing factions? Like, it's like, what's this like? I don't know. Maybe it's like, hey, we dropped like the new exhaust in like your car or whatever. And now it's like souped up, right? You get like a supercharge of the original four. Right. So like,
yeah, I mean, that's kind of what we're getting this patch with the new Soulbind stuff, which have a lot of very powerful effects.
That's true. But yeah, so I mean, maybe we'll see a fifth covenant. That's just it. The problem with the fifth covenant is like, they don't make changes to the other four, then everybody's whatever that new one is. Right. Or if the new one sucks, you just kind of sort of stay and you don't interact with the covenant.
Also, I kind of doubt that because of all the cosmetics that go with a covenant, I kind of doubt we'll get a whole new covenant.
Yeah, we're getting tier sets instead because they finally hired enough artists to make tier set art after firing them all. Unbelievable. I digress with old Blizzrad. But yeah, that's Lore Corner and some of the Jailer stuff. So now... we're flying through this now. Now it's time to talk about, I think, my favorite part of the podcast, which is the question and answer section. And sort of this is the time where we come in and answer any and all of your questions. You know, you can drop into us on Discord. You can join like the stream live, ask them there. You can tweet at us. However you want to get your questions in, you just send it to Emilson and myself, and we will answer them live on air. So the first question comes from Ayay, and they ask, how do you go about learning a new class and spec? You know, mostly their question is mostly focused on Mythic Plus.
Mythic rating,
I'm sorry. And they basically go on to say, like, you know, they've been asked to go Windwalker, next tier. And you know, a lot of times just reading the guides, looking at logs, using target dummies, you know, always gets you so far. And there's always some hidden stuff, just some things you don't know, you know, going into a spec. So how do you figure that out, right?
Honestly, just practice. Play it. Yeah. Get in there and play it.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, like, if I'm ever playing something new, I always at least read. So a guide from whatever is considered, like, to be fair, I'll go in the Discord, look at their FAQ channel, right, for the spec or whatever I'm playing. Yes. And sort of pick like what's the most important things I need to know, and it's really just playing it, right? To Samuelson's point, it's like once you pick up the basics, you'll start to realize, all right, this stuff is good, this stuff is bad, and it's sort of just sort of slowly learning as much as you can. I don't think there's ever a way for you to go in on a new spec, something you never played before, and really nail it the first time. I think you're going to screw up a lot, you're going to make mistakes, and I think it's, you have to go in with the mentality, or just at least the mindset, that you are going to, you, not you're going to learn things, like you need to learn things almost.
Yeah.
As you play it.
On that note, ask questions. Like if you got someone else in your guild that already plays it, or you know someone that knows someone that already plays it, you know, or you just want to come and like ask in one of our questions channels, like ask questions. Because there's honestly a lot to playing these specs, right? You know, something like, I think the Kyrian rotation for Windwalker is a great example of something that's fairly nuanced in like what you want to do during that versus what you want to do during the regular rotation. Because like right now you want to cancel Fists of Fury during Weapons of Order so you can get more Rising Sun kicks out while they're reduced by have they reduced chi costs, and like, but you don't want to necessarily be canceling your Fists of Fury outside of Weapons of Order. So yeah, there's like there's a lot going on, and some of that stuff, like, that's actually listed on the guide, but you know, 3 months ago that probably wasn't listed on the guide while they were still figuring it out.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think the other thing too, and I've actually experienced this, it's funny. So I got my first mythic Sire to Nathuris killing my monk this week.
Nice.
And so it was fun. And I, you know, having healed that fight on my paladin, you know, and I've played monk in the past, it's still so different in terms of playing it that like you basically have to sort of play through the fight. Cause like, it, on my monk, like I'd be like, or on my paladin, I'd be like, all right, here's where I use my cooldowns. Here's where, you know, I'll expect heavy damage. Like, here's my rotation, or here's what I should be expected to be doing at this point, right? Making sure I have like X, Y, and Z ability ready for something coming up. And like, on my monk, basically doing it for the first pull ever, like, was just awful. Like, it's crappy that we ended up, I think we three shot it. So we ended up killing Denathris in like three pulls. So I got like very little time to like adjust things. Right. And I think that's the biggest thing is that like, going in knowing you're not gonna like going in at least knowing the basics, like here's how I do damage, here's what my rotation looks like, right? If you're healing, you know, here's how I use certain spells, you know, here's when potentially my cooldowns are going to be used, right? You know, tanking, very similar.
And I mean, some of it is really at the end of the day just getting those reps on it. I did Zymox on my warrior this week, and one of the things that I never even thought about asking, because like warrior's a pretty mobile tank, like how do you get out with the thing when you have to take that out? Well, you use Heroic Leap, right? Easy. Except that you also can use, like, we had a oopsie whoopsie with the Windrush Totem for this the pull-in. Yeah. And so I had to use my my leap there. So how do I get out with the thing? And I mean, the answer is the same as it is on literally everything that's not a monk. You walk.
Yeah.
But you have to start walking right away.
Yeah, you can't stay in.
You can't stay in. Whereas, like, on my monk, I will stay in, and then I'll roll out, and it'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, I think it's mostly, you know, I think you use the guides and stuff like that to get the basics, and then you have to just play it, you know, get comfortable with it. And then once you feel comfortable, and like you think you've hit a peak or a plateau, I mean, in terms of like where you're at with the spec, then it's sort of diving into logs, right? Then it's looking at what some of the better logs that you see out there are doing. What are they doing differently than you, at least in terms of DPS, right? And yeah, it's just learning at that point from that. So, but yeah, at least initially it's, I mean, just play. Like I think people a lot of times are a little bit too afraid to make mistakes, right? Or at least like do something wrong. I think you just gotta be.
Go in, make mistakes, learn from them.
Yeah. Yeah, and make it easy on yourself. So
the nice thing is, so AA, you are starting at the beginning of the tier,
yes,
which means that you will have those early bosses to learn the spec on, which is actually great because those early bosses are going to be less mechanically intensive and you can get comfortable with the spec before moving to a later boss. It's a lot different from like switching to Windwalker for the last boss of the tier kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it'll definitely, yeah, that'll make it a lot easier than jumping in the middle, right? Being asked to like, hey, you played this entire instance as like a rogue or something. Can you make a Windwalker now? Because we need one for the final boss.
Damn it.
Yeah. But yeah, thank you. I don't know. Something like that. Thank you very much for the question. So second question coming up here is from Kate. And Kate asks, who puts summoning stones by the instances? What is their plot?
Wrong answers only.
Oh, wrong answer. So, all right, I have an answer here. So the marking, right, on the summoning stones looks very much like your hearthstone, right?
The innkeeper put it there.
Then so then Blizzard made a game called Hearthstone, same logo, and it's run by a small dwarf called the Innkeeper. You're right. So my thing is, I believe that the Innkeeper has placed these around the world. And the other thing too is like, how the fuck do you Hearthstone back, right? Like, well, you're out in the middle of the world and you just like rub this little stone and then it ports you to wherever you last talked to an innkeeper. So I think there is an underground Illuminati-like organization of innkeepers who every time you use a summoning stone or your Hearthstone are siphoning off a small portion of your life essence and basically creating an immortal army of innkeepers who are eventually going to take over the entire world of Azeroth.
All right, QAnon.
It's a thing. It's a thing. All right, innkeepers never age. All right, the innkeeper in like Goldshire has been the same age for 16 years, Emilson. They're not graying.
So all the kids in Stormwind.
Well, I mean, okay, to a lesser extent, maybe it's just an in any event, that doesn't matter. All I'm saying is innkeepers, like I think it's like an underground like organization that's just siphoning off life essence for everybody every time you use a summoning stone. So don't use them. Make everybody walk, except if you're me, then I need to be summoned. Please. I don't walk instances.
No. You gotta make sure you're summoned with a warlock gateway. Then at least, you know, you have the organic, locally grown life essence.
Yeah, non-corporate backed, yeah, life essence. Yeah. I think that, yeah. I'm going with that answer. Yeah. I think they're literally just an innkeeper mafia or whatever it is, Illuminati.
Okay. So I have two different answers because I think it depends on the time period. Okay.
Okay.
In the Burning Crusade, the summoning stones are actually set up by armchair gladiators, like the people that think that they're 2400 worthy, that don't actually go and play arenas.
Okay.
They set up the summoning stones so that they can then camp them.
Okay.
So what they do is they wait until they see someone, and then they go kill the people that did the summoning while the person that got summoned is loading in. Because again, Burning Crusade, right? It takes a little bit to load in. Nobody's got an SSD yet. And then they kill the person that was summoned.
That's messed up. But they've killed you, right? So I agree with them. They're probably 2400 rated arena. They just 3v1 G'd, right?
Yeah. But the thing is, that's really stopped being a thing. You know, ganking at summoning stones, not really a factor for the past several years.
Yeah.
So someone else had to take over the operations and the maintenance of all the summoning stones, right?
Yeah, of course.
And I mean, you mentioned the rune. I think you went in a little bit of a wrong direction with the rune.
Okay.
Because the rune is obviously put there by the rune carver.
Oh, okay.
And the cutscene that we're getting in 9.1 that, you know, tells us who the rune carver is actually a psyop to distract us from the real rune carver.
Okay.
And all of these summoning stones all over the multiple different planets that they're on are actually making a giant summoning circle.
Oh, okay. Okay, and if you plot them on a map, I bet you it's a perfect circle. I think you're right.
Yeah. And they are actually going to summon Giga Sargeras.
Wait, what? Just like run like through the middle of this portal, like just be larger than every other
object. Yeah, it's like the Well of Eternity.
Yeah.
Like the Well of Eternity, but bigger.
That's awesome. Do we get to fight him though? Like, or is he just gonna like?
I mean, you're welcome to try, puny ants.
Oh God. So wait, but why would there's so many questions? That's awesome, though. I didn't. To be fair, like for that to work, I did not realize that Azeroth had some weird geometry where it's a perfect.
Yeah, circle. Yeah, Azeroth is actually like S-shaped to make it.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah,
that's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. That's all. Just Giga Sargeras. What I'm imagining is like. The word he stabs it with the sword, but just instead of him stabbing Azeroth with the sword, it's just his like torso coming up, and it's like he's as tall as a sword. He's like swinging around to people. What was that? There was like some movie where that happened. It was like the sand monster in some Spider-Man movie where it did like a very similar thing.
Maybe.
In any event.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. Well, I mean, only one of us can be right. I kind of like your Giga Sargeras idea. I think my idea may be a little bit too on the nose, the old Illuminati.
Yeah.
But no. But Kate, but I guess...
There is a cabal of innkeepers, right? How do they all know how to attune these magic rocks, right?
I'm saying, like, there is something going on there. Like, and they don't even ask questions, which is the weird thing, right? There's never like a, like, what is this rock? It's like, oh, these rocks have been around forever. Like, when they say, like, my dad used to do this, aka not really my dad, just me, because I do not age, because I'm stealing your life force every time you use this, right? Like, used to do this back in the day. Like, come on. Yeah, you're right. Oh, fucking, you know what? Never using another Hearthstone. I use my Garrison Hearthstone from now on.
So, side note, I've been playing a lot of Burning Crusade the past couple weeks, and up to level 30. Fun fact, Swiftness potions sell very well and for a lot of gold. So I was able to buy my mount. I was able to self-fund my mount. That was fun.
That's awesome.
But also, I'm using my Hearthstone just a lot less than I expected to.
Oh, really?
Like, it's just so, and some of this is the level range that I'm in right now. Like, I'm level 30 something, you know. Yeah. And so I'm going back and forth between like Hillsbrad Foothills. I'm in Stranglethorn Vale right now, but I was in the Thousand Needles in the south end of the Barrens, as right. well as up in Stonetown Mountains. So there's like four different zones that I've been going back and forth in. And like basically my Hearthstone ended up basically being the easy way for me to get back to the Eastern Kingdoms.
Gotcha.
And so, like, if I'm in Stone Town, it's like, do I actually go and put my Hearthstone in here? Or do I use it to go back to Tauren Mill after I finish the quests I'm doing here? Because it's going to save me a lot of time to not have to go all the way back to Orgrimmar.
Yep.
And then take the boat over to Undercity and then fly from Undercity over to Tauren Mill. Like, so, I don't know. I just thought that was...
Yeah, kind of I will say, too, that, like, one thing I noticed too about classic, I know that we're on a little classic kick here at the end, but was that the flight points are much more spread out than I remember.
Yeah.
Like much.
My flight point zone.
Yeah. Like, which is much more spread out. And even in, it's funny, even in BC, like, cause I'm in Hellfire right now, there's only like two, well, there's four in that zone. But even that, like, the zones are so big that, like, I feel like if this was like a zone now, there'd be like seven or eight where you could like jump between a bunch of different points, right?
Yeah. Which I actually, I honestly, I don't mind. I think it's fine.
It's a weird thing that, like, if retail wasn't a thing, I think I'd still play BC again. Like, if they had shut down retail and were like, oh, like, we're done, we're not making this anymore, and hey, you get to relive BC Classic, I'd probably still play. Like, all my playtime that would be spent in retail would just be spent in BC. Like, I'd probably still play WoW in terms of an MMO, just because I think it's still fun to do it, as weird as that sounds. Like, as slow as it is, like, the parts of retail I care about are just doing the raids, and the parts of BC I care about are, like, getting to do the raids, which is, like, just a very different experience, right? So,
all in that vein, Cory Doctorow, like, we're way off topic now. Yeah. Cory Doctorow had this very interesting thread on media consumption on Twitter this week. And basically contrasting, like, active consumption of media active participation in versus passive consumption of media. Yeah. Like, the contrast between, even just, like, in the 90s, turning on the TV and, like, you pick a channel, like, very little activity. You pick a channel, you watch what's on the channel, and you have no control over it, versus like when the TiVo came out, you know. Yeah. And suddenly you could go and you could program your TiVo to record TV, and then, like, you could watch what you wanted to watch when you wanted to watch it. WoW, actually, like, retail versus classic actually kind of feels like that, because a lot of retail stuff is actually very, very passive, right?
Right.
You're active going and doing your dailies, but by and large, like, we've talked about how a lot of it feels like it's designed to be done while you're watching Netflix.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very, very passive. And then, like, in classic, like you can still watch Netflix while you're doing it. Let's be real here. But you like it requires more attention. Like it's more engaging. You have to be more of an active participant in it than you do in retail. And it's not just like the combat, because the combat is simpler.
Oh yeah.
For the most part. It's more likely to kill you, but that's just a numbers thing. But then it's like pathfinding. How do you get from point A to point B? Like there's not a flight point necessarily to what you want to go. So where's the closest flight point? Is it worth doing that? Or should you go to the one that's like actually farther away, but you don't have to run through the higher level mobs, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
And so there's like, there's that, there's even if you are using like Questy or one of the Quest Helper add-ons, the markers for those are not as perfect as the quest markers in retail.
Oh yeah.
Like there's just a lot.
Yeah. And it's like, it's a lot slower, like, and more deliberate, right? Like we were doing, I was leveling with a buddy the other night and we were in Hellfire and I was like, all right, well, let's do this quest and this quest. And like, we'll run and like, we'll do it in like this order and we should be done. And we got to like the second one and I'm like, I was thinking maybe a half hour loop we would have done. It was like, got to the second part of it and it already been like 30 minutes because I underestimated like the amount of space between two points are right running. And then like the fact that like the combat is a little bit slower. So it's like almost like you're not artificially spending more time doing something, but you have to be like very deliberate around like, I want to do these three things and it's going to take me an hour. Right.
Right. And because I think actually kind of because it takes longer, it actually it very directly like rewards you for taking a second to think about what you're going to do. Right. Like you said, like we're going to do this and then we're going to do this and then we're going to do this versus on retail. I kind of am like, you know, oh, I'm going to go do this. And not really think about, you know, the fact that I need to be in Orbos for this thing and I need to be in the mall for that thing and not really thinking about pathfinding at all.
Yeah.
Because I can just hearth every 15 minutes.
And like port around, like there's ports everywhere, right?
Yeah.
The flight points drop you exactly where you need to be. And
so while you're leveling as well, this becomes more obvious, I think, most obvious if you compare like the classic zones to the Cataclysm classic zones.
Yeah.
And the Cataclysm ones, all of the quests are like very neatly co-located. Like they're all in the same place. You get to do your kill quest and your loot quest and your like
talk
to someone quest and your fetch quest all at the same time by design. Whereas in classic, there's a lot more of like, well, there's this quest in like, I was just in Stonetown Mountain, not Stone, Thousand Needles. And I had, you know, five different quests to do.
Yep.
And if I just like did them in the order that I'd gotten them, they're all over the zone. But if I, you know, I took a second and I thought about it and I was like, okay, so I'm going to go do these two quests over here. And I think those probably have follow-up quests. So I'm going to go back to the town. I'm going to turn them in. I'm going to try and get the follow-ups and see where those are. And then it turned out one of those was at the same location as another one that I had. And so then I'm like, I mean, I'm engaged, like actively participating in the like, okay, I'm going to think about what I want to do.
Yeah.
Instead of just like following the quest markers. And I'm also, for reference, I am playing without a quest add-on. So I have to actually spend a little bit more time thinking about it because I have to actually like read and reread the quest and occasionally pull up Wowhead because you do run into quests that do not have good descriptions of where things are.
Yeah. No, yeah. And I think, similarly, like, just the way the BC quests are set up, it's like you can like we did the forge camps that are north of the Horde city, right? And I had forgotten, but like literally it's like you do a quest there, you come back to town, you do another quest there, you come back to town, you do like a third, it's like back and forth. So like I was like, we did a bunch of other quests around at the first loop and then went back to town. I was like, oh, we have to run right back to that same area. So like, well, let's just do it real quick, it'll be fine. Went back up, came back down to town, was like, we go back, what the hell? So like we spent like just going running back and forth a bunch, which is like something that, to your point, like after Cataclysm they would have never done. And it's funny, at the time when they made the changes in Cataclysm, I remember it being like, this is a great change, right? I 100% enjoy picking up all the quests in a town, running around doing it all, coming back, turning it all in, and like being on that same loop, right, where you don't have to like, not like some of the quests have you go right back to the same area, right? Or you know, other quests are just done. It's sort of like you're, if you pick them all up and you do them all, you're on the same loop, right? So it's going to send you the the follow-ups to any of that is going to send you to the same next area, or whatever it ends up being. So I understand why they made the change, because it's somewhat frustrating, but at the same time, being so, like, having just leveled in Shadowlands and doing the same thing in Legion and BFA, it's nice to not basically be on rails, right? It's nice to have that sort of, like, shit, like, I should not have come home, like, I should have, like, or I should have come home after I did I should have gone back to town after the first one, because I'm going to be right back in this area so I can finish the other one that I spent an extra 20 minutes on getting one thing to drop, like, to complete. So
yeah, I think really the issue is just, like, I still think that thing you were talking about in Hellfire Peninsula is probably just bad design. Like,
yeah, no, I
like it when it's possible for you to, like, organize your quest in such a way that I'm going to go and do these, and then I'm going to go back to town. I'm going to go and do those, and then come back to town. But the way that it's all done for you by the game in retail, I think is, like, you don't have to think about it. The game does it for you in the same way that, you know, someone else decided which show takes which time slot on a TV network instead of you picking, like, oh, I'm going to go and I'm going to watch this show now.
Right.
You know, someone else made the decision and you don't have to think about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know. BC is going to be fun. I'm slowly leveling in Hellfire right now. Goal is still to kill Kale. So we'll got to work on those attunements. Got to get to 70, then work on those attunements, which will be fun. But yeah, I mean, it's been neat to go back, because I mean, yeah, I've said this a lot, but BC was like when I started no-lifing this game. Like,
yeah.
I just got a job. I didn't live near any of my friends. So literally it was like, get home from work at 5:30, play till midnight, go to bed, do the same thing the next day, like literally 7 days a week. So it was fun. It was fun back then. So
yeah.
Cool. Well, we are now off on a crazy tangent. We did get a little BC talk in there, which I think is always good. But Kate, I don't know if we ever thanked Kate for their question. So Kate, thank you for the question. Plot to summon Giga Sargeras or an Illuminati-like group of innkeepers stealing our life essences to be immortal. Either of those things could be why summoning.
All of the inns have fireplaces. Did you notice that? Literally Illuminati.
And they never go out. So, in any event, thank you for the questions. And I think that is it for our episode for this week. So,
yeah.
I don't think there's any other topics we have. We are done.
We even had early. That extra topic on the Burning Crusade.
Exactly. This week, we crushed it today. So
we crushed it. All right. Well, thank you all for listening to this episode of the Peaker Serenity podcast. As always, it's been fun putting these together. Those of you that came and hung out in chat, hi and welcome. And we hope to see you next week as well, because we will be back for another episode next week, 1:30 p.m. on Sunday. On Emelson's Twitch channel, which is just twitch.tv/Emelson. And as always, if you want to get involved in the community outside of these streams, please come and join our Discord, the Peak of Serenity Discord. We've got lounge channels to come and hang out, as well as question and answer channels and discussion channels, where we talk about things like upcoming changes to the Mythic Plus affixes or to the different specs and how they interact. Like, actually, right now, Brewmaster has a bug on beta where on PTR where their absorbs don't work. Great bug. But of course, as well, if you'd like to support this show and all of the other work that we do over on the Peak of Serenity, you can do that over at our Patreon at patreon.com/Peak of Serenity. But that is going to be it for our show today. So we will see you next week, same time, same place. Have a good one.
Bye.